Welcome to the Revenue Lounge, a podcast for revenue operations professionals who want to understand the various facets of this important go-to-market function. In each episode, the team at Nectar interviews revenue warriors on how they are reimagining revenue operations in creative and disruptive ways, and what are their secrets to building a scalable and predictable revenue engine. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Revenue Lounge. I'm your host, Randy Likas, and today I'm joined by John Russo, founder of B2B Fusion. B2B Fusion is a sales and marketing performance firm helping companies with impactful account-based marketing strategy and measurement. John, thanks you so much for joining us today.
Randy, excited to be here. Thanks for involving me.
Yeah, I'm as well. John, I usually like to start these episodes and just have you talk us through a little bit about your background. What led you to start B2B Fusion many years ago, and maybe some examples of the type of work that you do for your clients?
Yeah, great question, Randy, to start off with. And going back in history, so B2B Fusion was really founded on a frustration of my inability to measure when I had cutting state-of-the-art tools and I wasn't able to measure my marketing effectiveness as a CMO. So I've been a practicing CMO for 10 years in both public and private companies that have scaled, particularly in the $50 million to $500 million range. One of those companies has scaled, quadrupled revenues with the rest of the team too, to $200 million in revenue. And I saw one of the challenges was, how do I measure my impact? My last CMO assignment, I couldn't do it other than in Excel. And literally, the ink was wet on my paper, and I'm racing it to the board of directors. And they were amazed. Granted, this was like 15 years ago. They were like, oh my God, we've never seen marketing measured before. And I remember going home to my wife saying how frustrated I was, saying I have all this technology, yet I'm doing everything in Excel. And that's what really birthed the concept of B2B Fusion.
So the type of work that you're doing for your clients right now, is it focused on measurement of pipeline overall or marketing programs overall? Are you specializing in specific areas like ABM? Tell us about sort of the type of work and maybe like the entry points that you'll get involved with in a customer engagement.
Yeah, great question. And the second part of your first question too. So from that initial frustration, we began a journey, and long story short, about halfway through our journey, this was a several-year journey, we ended up doing a lot of work for a company called Engageo, which is now the interface for Demandbase.
Yep.
We did roughly a little over a third of their customer implementations back in the day, and I never woke up, even though I had a great relationship with John Miller at the time, who's also my former channel partner when I was CMO. I never woke up saying, hey, I want to be the best implementer of Engageo. But instead, what we did was we took it to school and figured out where were the common pain points in and around the shared KPIs. So from that time, we've really pivoted our company, focused on what I call account-based experience, or the X, because it crosses multiple silos. Mm-hmm. And we are typically engaged, Randy, in a couple different scenarios. The most common scenario is we've purchased an account-based tool like a Sixth Sense, a Demandbase, a G2. We've got an organization that has a lot of pressure for revenue goals, and we're not getting the revenue in that we should be out of this level of investment, not just in the platform, but in the programs and the people. We're just not getting the result. Mm-hmm. And we parachute in typically at that point. So we're really not in the implementation phases like we were 7-8 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're now in more of the strategic conversation. We have a lot of people on our team that are operationally savvy, so we know how to connect the dots. In fact, that's one of my hiring tenets, is nobody comes from an agency. We're all practitioners. Mm-hmm. And so we're able to connect those dots quickly, with the North Star being reporting either in a unified funnel with account base and a lead base funnel, or a standalone funnel. We figured out a way how to do that, and that brings the parties together in a sales and marketing alignment, which we'll get into a little bit later on. But that's current day focus and where we parachute in.
Great. Fantastic. So before we get into sort of ABX, and I want to ask you more of a broader question, I guess more of a fundamental question that I think a lot of companies are really struggling with right now, and that is pipeline. There's a lot of dynamics that are going on in the marketplace today with the abuse of the sales engagement platforms that have, you know, been mass customization and automation. And people are just like, we're in this area that I call like the great ignore. And I got that term from Mark Casaglow, who used to lead all of sales over at Outreach, where people are just not responding back to us like they were in the past. And they're just ignoring us. And it's harder than ever. And I think you were on a panel at B2BMX last fall, and you sat on a panel of CROs, or you led the panel of CROs, and you had an interesting question that you had shared with me. And first meetings were down like 30 to 50% across the board. And I think that's a function of some of these other market dynamics that are going on. So I'd like for maybe for you to address that. So what are some of the marketing dynamics that you're seeing right now around pipeline generation? And why do you think that is?
Yeah, and a terrific memory about the B2BMX. In fact, I'll be back there moderating a CMO panel this year in a couple of weeks. But on the pipeline side, first of all, as an operator, I really feel for operators right now. I've never seen such a challenging time to be an operator, quite frankly. And I've been in this industry for an awful long time, a B2B high tech in particular, but it's permeated across multiple industries right now. So it is super challenging. As you said, one of the challenges is, how do you even get that meeting? People are not tuned in right now. So I think it's putting a lot more pressure on kind of the invisible or top of the funnel element of making sure that marketers are educating the market and in front of their prospects before they're reaching out to sales. Because by the time they reach out to sales, it's more of a fulfillment arm, or we've shortlisted it down to two, and yep, you're already on the goal line of a conversation. It's very difficult, I think, in this day and age to shift perceptions once that initial contact really gets engaged, yeah, with the account. So I think in this day and age of economic uncertainty, nobody wants to make a decision that everybody else doesn't agree with. You know, a lot of choppiness in the market. You don't know if a tariff is going to drop out of right field on somebody. So that puts a lot of unusual strain. There's been AI added to the mix. So people don't know, is my job secure? Is it not secure? And everybody has to perform right now because we've got the hangover of COVID and the out of whack models for the cost of acquisition has just gone through the roof on sales and marketing. So there's an inordinate amount of pressure right now on sales and marketing leaders to produce pipeline. And where it will manifest is higher quality programs at that top of the funnel, either really educating, bringing along your fans of your product, plays that can engage very early on in the buying process. And once they get into the process, really prescriptive plays to then potentially accelerate. But I'd say the primary issue right now on pipeline is that top of the funnel and getting granular to really understand what's working and what's not. Yeah, that too has been a big topic of conversation. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I see a lot of murkiness right now about pipeline overall, and it's not surprising given all those challenges.
Yeah, you brought up the point about how people are going through the process on their own before they want to engage, and they might have already somebody in mind. It reminds me of the recent research that Carrie Cunningham did at Sixth Sense. About 70% of the buying process is happening before they want to engage with sales. It's very similar to some of the other research that's out there. And I think what's happening is it requires a bit of a change in the playbooks, meaning the traditional playbooks was, hey, somebody went to the website, they downloaded a little piece of content, they attended a webinar, go stick the SDR out there to go get a meeting. That's not really what people are doing, right? They're sort of in the education side on their own, and they're going to contact you when they're ready. And so I think it's going to require maybe a bit of evolvement of how we've done things before as far as how SDRs, what we task them to do, but also how we measure them, right? It's not just about getting that meeting. Maybe it's about creating that digital relationship with them and earning trust over time. And so I think the SDR playbooks is a little bit more down funnel. I think we're talking more, still a little bit more high level, but are you seeing that with this challenge with top of funnel, that people are still reluctant to make the changes to the playbooks that they've had in the past, and that's still why we're having that trouble? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it with the challenges of companies that are used to like a locomotive or a battleship. They're very difficult to turn on a dime, and we've had so much turn on the dime change, it's very difficult for companies to catch up to that. embedded in that is a tendency, not set in stone, but a tendency for companies to be very transactional in their approach. Meaning, hey, I just have to reach out to a greater quantity of people. And I know if I talk to 1,000 people, 25% of those will make it to the next stage or whatever the number is.
Yeah.
So there's this mentality that is ingrained, particularly at the non-marketing executive that may not have a lot of operational depth at the sales and marketing functions. It feels to me like there's a lot of quantitative driven of, like, we just got to produce more demos and produce more. Well, yeah, you do have to produce more demos, but is throwing more spaghetti against the wall the answer? In this environment right now, I'd say probably not. So, yeah, they're just slower to change, I think. But I think what you'll also see is some companies are starting to really understand how to change. A good example from a large scalable organization would be HubSpot. They are doing phenomenal on their revenue per employee. Look at any of their KPIs or metrics. Could they be doing better? Yeah, they could, maybe on the net new logo side.
Yeah.
But the retention, they've knocked it out of the park. They are doing it really, really well over there. So they have pivoted their business model. I'm sure for every HubSpot out there, there's 10 others that are not as agile. And I think they're going to be paying the price, unfortunately, because in today's environment, you can't afford the old way of doing business because you'll be out of business.
Yeah. The other thing that is happening, and I think I would say it's got a lot of momentum and a lot of interest that's happening in the market right now, and it's relates back to what you just said about this old way of doing things. It's this idea that most companies are still measuring and holding their, as a key metric or key leading indicator of pipeline, is how many MQLs are we able to develop through our campaigns. I've been to a lot of conferences, as you have over the past year, and every one of these conferences, there seems to be some flavor of, we've got to move away from individual leads because that's not the way that buying decisions are made any longer, right? They're made by a group of people within an organization, collectively a buying committee or a buying group. Forrester talks a lot about, you know, goodbye MQL, hello buying groups, right? And they've had the companies who are re-architecting the way in which they think about these individual leads and how they go about developing pipeline is more focused on the swarm of buyers that are happening at top of funnel. That's probably the best indicator of whether or not something might be going on in an organization, not necessarily if somebody scores up to an MQL, but are there multiple people at this account who are starting to shed some signals? Even like the one of the companies that has had great success moving this model is Palo Alto Networks. And they will say, we're not saying goodbye to the MQL. That's still very important. It's sort of like reprioritizing the MQL. I would love to get your thoughts. Like, you're very in tune with the market as well. What are your thoughts around this whole idea of individual leads are just not the way to do it anymore? MQLs are certainly not as effective. There's a ton of waste. Companies should be thinking about moving over to a buying group or an opportunity-based marketing motion. We'd love to hear what you think about this sort of general movement or idea that's going on in the market.
You're right. There is definitely an evolution here and a set of ideas. And I'm going to quickly touch on three different approaches here. One approach might be you have a blend of MQLs and opportunities. A second approach would be the purest view of all opportunities, and then a very new approach that I think hasn't yet fully manifested is the AI approach. So let me just quickly click into the first one. In our experience, and there was a good article, because I was the author, of course it's going to be good, but there was an article I wrote a few years ago, actually, for CMS Newswire, is the MQL dead? If you Google it, it'll bring you up. John Russo, CMS Newswire, MQL dead. It'll bring you up to the article, or we can post it in the show notes. In that article, I describe the first two models. And typically what we have seen, about 7 out of 10 organizations still use the lead, meaning the Salesforce.com definition of lead, in their current vernacular. And that's a very hard metric to move away from because their boards report on it, the CEO gets reporting, the CFOs that we trained on this model from 10 years ago, it's all in their heads. The other thing that complicates that is there are some leads that actually can be very good. Let me give you an example. A contact us or demo now that is not a bot, like a real person that has real intent.
Mm-hmm.
So one way of looking at this that we've looked at with that mixed model is grouping the MQLs into high intent, event-based leads, perhaps all other leads as a third category, and being able to track that as a source into one funnel. Why that becomes valuable is you can still keep your MQL model and still track your MQL model. And for an SDR, it gives them the insights on what's converting high intent, event, or all other, and where they should spend their time as things come inbound. Or perhaps marketing reached out and somebody responds on a marketing outreach. So there is a school of thought of you could have that mixed model of leads and opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the purist view, which you've heard others in the industry echoing, and we do support that model too. And when I say support, it's somewhat self-serving. I mean, we do a lot of reporting for account-based motions to help them build the right data structures, whether they use Tableau or Looker or anything else. That's almost secondary. You got to have the right data structures in place to do it. And an all-opportunity model does make sense in certain scenarios. In fact, we've got a healthcare client right now that has moved in that direction and said, hey, look, our target market is fixed. We have 300 target accounts because it's North America healthcare. There are a known and finite group that we're going after. We know our buyers. It's not like an infinite green field here. So in their model, the all-opportunity approach works out really, really well and also makes it a little cleaner for reporting purposes. The however is you can gum up the system with a lot of open opportunities. So there's trade-offs, and that article goes through in depth about the trade-offs, the pros, the cons, and we could support from a reporting perspective either of the choices that the client wants to make, and we can help them with that decision too if they decide they want to take that. The third model that's now emerging, if I were to update that article today, would be an AI approach. So there could be a case where, you know, we have defined the world for the last 15, 20 years based on Salesforce.com architecture and mm-hmm. their language.
Yep.
What if, this is a bold statement, but what if Salesforce.com goes away? And you have a Snowflake database with AI as the interface
yeah.
where I could query what's going on with my Home Depot account, what's going on with IBM or XYZ account, who am I talking with, who am I engaged with, what are the intent signals that are coming up in that account. I think AI opens up a whole new set of possibilities that none of us have even explored. The only company that I've heard so far that has made some progress on that publicly is Chili Piper. They've come out and said that they're heading in that direction. And some of it could be a little bit of marketing on their part, too, of, hey, look at me, I'm doing something different. And it does catch attention.
Yeah.
But they're probably not too far away from reality, because in this AI world, you may not need all these nice, neat sets of data if you have it in Snowflake, if you have the UI to enter that information. You still have the concept of buyer's groups. You can have multiple buyer groups in an account,
yep.
but you can query it differently with AI, assuming AI quality is good, and that's a big assumption, but there could be a day, and we might already be in this day without even realizing it. We may look back at this podcast and say, holy cow, it's the exact right thing, but I definitely see that as going to be a new model to contend with.
I agree. We've heard that similar argument about this possibility of, like, do we have to have Salesforce any longer? And can we move into a data for precisely what you just said? I think it's a really interesting thing to think about. The question I have is, like, how far out is that, right? Because Salesforce is just so ingrained in organizations, not just for sales and marketing, but everything else that sort of touches it, right? So the question is, how far off? And nobody knows the answer to that. But I think it's a really interesting question to pose, because you're right about that.
Yeah, and I don't know how far we are, but I do know that we're all feeling a whole lot of cost pressure right now. All my yeah. clients are feeling pressure like you would not believe. That's the only reason I could see why somebody in a bigger company would question, hey, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars yeah. here. Is there another way
yeah.
we could be doing it? The smaller companies are going to figure that out quickly.
Yeah.
Because they can. They don't have the tech debt. But
right.
you're right. It's not like a light switch. It's not going to happen overnight. It has to be something seismic that makes somebody start questioning it.
Yeah.
And right now, we all thought, okay, at least I thought, We're turning the page on 2025. 2023, 2024, not so good. 2025 is our year. We got off to a great start. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like things the last few weeks have changed a little bit, like some dose of reality. So
yeah.
If pipeline doesn't improve this year, I think anything is game. And AI seems to be an easy way to wrap your mind around cutting cost.
Yeah. So let's transition a little bit. And I want to build off the previous point of this whole idea around buying groups or multiple people, you know, that are sort of swarming at an account at top funnel. Because I think specifically around ABX type of programs, when we have conversations with folks and we ask them about this idea of buying groups, they say, well, we're doing that already, right? We're looking at marketing qualified accounts, which does get you closer to that idea of buying groups, but they're still looking at accounts. What leads can we get from maybe these marketing qualified accounts? And I think the team over at Forrester will say like MQAs are still a little bit too broad, right? Because you could have multiple buying groups from an account, if you're a large enough account, where there's different products or solutions that have multiple buying groups that are part of that. So do you agree? Does MQAs need to evolve a little bit more to get more closer to an opportunity-centric type of motion? Or do you think MQAs as they are defined right now are really the right way to look at it?
Yeah, that's a really thoughtful question. And an MQA almost feels a lot like an MQL in that it becomes a bit of a vanity metric because you don't know how that MQA really got created in terms of, was it engagement? And there are ways to filter this aspect up, but I'll mention it anyway. Was it your own engagement that triggered an MQA? Was it the sales team just talking to somebody and causing that issue? We have seen that on a couple instances where the way it was initially set up, it triggered an MQA. Is it a bot that's clicking? Or is it real interest? Like, it could be real interest. So I would agree that a refinement of that definition is needed. I would still keep, and we're doing this currently for another client where we're keeping that MQA definition, but it always needs some, whether you call it MQA, 6QA, John QA, it doesn't matter what you call it. It needs some sort of validation. And somebody, ideally an SDR, is validating that information and validating, is this really a true signal? Somebody who's looking at all the insights to say, go pursue this.
Right.
Or is it a false start, false positive, in which case we discard it. So what we see is not only measuring this, which we're doing now for clients, and this particular use case, we're defining another stage, just calling it a qualified account. Stage zero, non-reportable.
Yep.
So the MQA gets validated, and once it's validated, it drops into then the stage zero for the SDR to do true, like get the meeting, blah, 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 to bring it over to a reportable stage one, as an example.
Yep.
So I do think definitions matter, getting granular matters. A lot of it depends on the systems you own, the people that you can influence change and do change management with. There's a lot of variables there. But the more granular you can get, then you can see exactly where your process is cutting out.
Yep.
So I think it's too aspirational to say, ta-da, here's a 6QA or an MQA. And I've publicly said this too, that they're, first of all, they're perishable, meaning you have a certain amount of time. If there is true interest in there, you better be like figuring that out quick, because while you're doing this, your competitor's also doing it. So you got to jump on those 6QA and MQAs, having some sort of, I hate to call it like an SLA, because those things were like the death of an operator, like, ah, freaking SLA. But somebody's got to be keeping track of, are you doing the follow-up on those QAs? But anyway, to answer your question, I do think a finer definition, we're already doing it with our clients today, so I'm not surprised. I applaud Forrester for recognizing that and agree with them.
You talk to a lot of practitioners, either from your customer, your prospect conversations. You do your company's Friday vlog, where you've talked to hundreds of people. What do you think the state of ABM, ABX is today with most companies? What are people concerned about today that maybe they weren't 12 to 18 months ago, specifically as it relates to ABM, ABX?
Yeah, that's a super thoughtful question. Let me think about 12 to 18 months ago, almost like 2 years ago. It was a bit of a ABM or ABX. First of all, it was more ABM back then. So it became more of a marketing project that you were hoping that would get traction. I feel like the term ABM has fallen out a little bit, replaced by other terms and other shiny pennies from a positioning perspective. The however is what we see is so much pressure right now on pipeline and the inability to convert that people are coming back to it. Particularly larger companies right now are coming back to it saying, why isn't this working? We're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on the platform. We're spending a lot of money on programs. We got all sorts of pressure. Why isn't this working?
Yeah.
And they're being a little bit more thoughtful and diligent. Don't get me wrong. There's still pressure to make shit happen like yesterday, pardon my French, but, you know, make stuff happen. But they're being a whole lot more thoughtful today. And it's the pipeline pressure that's driving it. I also think there's a recognition that marketing can't do this alone. So even I'm trying to change my language to it's ABX now.
Mm-hmm.
You need sales. This is not a marketing pet project. This is a strategic company initiative that drives revenue cross-functionally, sales, marketing. And the other side of the pendulum that's also coming into play is the whole customer upsell, resell side. That, too, was not talked about 24 months ago like it's being talked about now, because it's a lot easier to upsell and cross-sell than it is to do net new. So now I'm seeing quota-carrying salespeople involved in upsell, resell, where 24, 36 months ago, that would never be heard of. Mm-hmm. That was just for, and same thing with marketers. Oh, customers, somebody else handles that. We don't do that. It was all new logo, like 24 or 36 months ago. Our guns were pointed exclusively to new logo.
Yeah.
That pendulum has definitely shifted. So probably to answer your question, a combination of those tactics have changed the urgency and the meaning, I think, of ABX overall in the last 12 to 18 months or so.
So what do you think companies need to do to address that, right? So if that's the urgency now, where do they start? And how do they go back to the executives or the board and say, look, we got to start thinking a little bit differently? What recommendations might you make for the first couple things they need to think about?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I'll give you the non-self-serving answer and then the self will sound like self-serving answer. But the first thing that we're advising clients is you got to pick some low-hanging fruit here, because people need quicker wins right now and they're tired of hearing it's an 18-month sales cycle. So trying to go after at-risk accounts, as an example, with your ABM initiative or ABX initiative, not a great place to start. They could be reasons that an account is churning that are way outside of sales and marketing control, product fit. People move around. There's just too many dynamics. But there is a subset of existing clients on the cross-sell and upsell that are not at risk. Those are more likely to be a lower hanging fruit or someone who's already in the pipeline itself. So trying to be aspirational and say, hey, we've never sold into General Motors before, but this week we're going to sell into General Motors, that's probably not going to happen to have a quick win on ABX. So for starters, I would think real hard around getting everybody rallied around a common set of accounts to go after. That's the non-self-serving model. Now, what will sound like the self-serving model would be the advantage of having an outside set of eyes, whether it's us or anybody, is one can be neutral and be clinical about it and look across your entire sales and marketing and customer experience pipeline to then come back to say, okay, in marketing, by the way, 19 times out of 20, the CMO would trigger this kind of behavior, or VP of demand gen, or rarely, but VP of marketing ops or marketing ops leader. Usually it's a demand gen, an ABX leader, or a CMO who recognizes we're just not getting the performance that we need to be getting. We're spending a lot and we're not getting the return.
Yep.
By bringing in that neutral party, you can hear all the different parties, net it out, and then come up with an enablement game plan as to what's going to change in a reset, maybe it even be a relaunch, depending on, we've had clients that we've done relaunches of pilots, we've had established KPIs, but those would be the two starting points. I choose one of those two paths, and the advantage of the second one, just to, again, it'll sound somewhat self-serving, is it could be a little bit faster because an outside entity has probably seen this problem a few times.
Yeah.
So rather than stepping on the same landmines, you can jump and leapfrog ahead. So those would be the two approaches that I would think about.
Very good. If you look across many of the different clients that you've worked with or conversations that you've had, does it tend to be a strategy problem or does it tend to be an execution problem? Or does it both?
Yeah, the way I define strategy is almost like philosophical alignment on account-based for pipeline and then operational alignment, which I think corresponds to your strategy and the execution buckets. Yeah. And it's super easy to get philosophical alignment. In fact, I did a video on this recently where it's super easy for CEO, yeah, let's go do account-based. Yeah, make it happen. John, do more with less. Yeah, go ahead, go do that. It's super easy to get the philosophical pat on the back, and you think you're doing it. It's 100% execution that is the issue. And really, it requires hard work. Like, this is hard stuff. Selling to an enterprise on an account-based motion, that's hard work.
Yep.
And people think that there's just an easy button. There isn't. You could prioritize how to get there, but it's 100% operational challenge, I'd say, cloaked as sometimes as a strategic problem. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's misalignment at the strategic level. Sometimes we see marketing really pushing it and sales not. Sometimes we've seen sales pushing for leads, not accounts. It sometimes can be a strategic issue. I shouldn't say 100%. Maybe it's 95% operational. But if you're committed to doing it, then it's almost 100%. It all falls on the execution, process, data, people, all that stuff.
Yeah. I want to go back to something you mentioned before, which is like around the measurement. And one thing when we talk with clients, we hear that there's always going to be a data problem to help them measure, right? And many times, like, measuring the effectiveness has more to do with what data you can connect, not necessarily that we want to measure it. And so when you think about running an ABX motion, I'd break the question down a few different ways. When you're doing the strategic work of ABM, what's the primary data sources that you need to have at your fingertips to be able to set up the right programs? And the executional side, what are the key operational data points that you need to be able to measure?
Yeah, let me bubble it up to the second part of your question. Like, what does good look like in terms of measurement? And we typically look at volume, velocity, and we're looking at it across any input into the funnel. So be it partners, inbound, leads, almost like we categorize any way somebody can get into your funnel. What's important to us is capturing that and defining it. Now, in our case, for simplicity's sake, it's less about being precise about the attribution. And I've publicly said this before. I said complex attributions like chasing a ghost. I've been trying to do this for 20 years, and I've yet to nail that down. I had best practice companies telling me, you got to do this, you got to do that. And they were chasing that ghost too. They had never done it. But if you have the same repetitive process and you're comparing yourself to yourself, as long as you're not moving the goalpost, or if you agree to move the goalpost, you move it once, it's getting that definition, the repeatable process on volume, velocity, and the inputs of that funnel that we typically take a look at. And we're doing it on last touch. So a marketing automation system and ideally Salesforce.com is really the two things that you need to measure. Now, do we have clients that use Tableau and Looker and belt and suspenders? Yes, you can certainly do it that way. And the challenge we see with those systems is they're a separate system. You need a data jockey. The insights are not valuable to the SDR or to the salespeople that need to know what's going on in that account. So it's like another swivel chair system where somebody has to move and log in. A salesperson's not doing that. An SDR is not doing it. They don't have time.
Right.
And that's a blind spot that we marketers have. They think, oh, we got all these shiny tools and do this, do that. Sales needs simplicity and as few moving parts as possible. But to answer your question, you really just need those two things. You need marketing automation and Salesforce. Pre-AI. AI can change a lot of this.
Yeah.
With the Chili Piper example that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
But those are the two necessary ingredients. Everything else can be measured. It can be tracked. It can be trended. And it can be done in a way that makes your SDR and your sales teams productive. It's additive to their workflow, which, again, marketers, we're not trained to think that way. But that's what sales does day in, day out, is they're hammering away, and you can't be adding steps to their workflow. Every click counts. So you got to be really mindful of that. So those are the two systems. I think that's all you need.
If I could double click for a moment on that. So I agree with you that the marketing automation system and Salesforce are your two primary systems. I think what happens most times when we talk with customers is that it's difficult to do that, because if you think about all of the people that get involved in a sales process when, you know, come in and out of a deal over the course of, let's just call it 9 months, sales in the history of time just doesn't update those people. Right? They keep it in their head, but they don't manually put it in there. And there's some sales tech that can help with that. But the missing piece is that it's always contained in a separate system. It's never, rarely is it ever brought back into the Salesforce opportunity record. And so what most marketers are left with is when they go back and they look at their historic opportunities, they've got maybe one or two people, right? Because the validation rule was he had to attach some person to the opportunity, but all of those influencers that marketing went after, maybe mid-funnel and bottom of the funnel, just never show up on the opportunity. And so it's really hard to measure what we did as a marketer because we don't have the right data set in Salesforce on the opportunities. Is that something that you all see, or how do you deal with that when you're trying to measure attribution or influence, but you don't have the right data set in Salesforce, right? Because there's missing data.
And I should probably amend my two systems to answer this question. Not even to answer the question. I thought about it afterward too. Having an account-based platform certainly can be helpful. It's not necessarily the silver bullet, but something that can produce the 6QA, MQA, XQA, whatever you want to call it, that is particularly helpful, going back to your previous question. So it's really three things now that I think about it. It's marketing automation, Salesforce, and a platform in an ideal world. There are newer ways now that are emerging to get by that, but for this discussion, let's assume that's minimum. Some of those platforms identify the gaps, the white space of who's missing in that buying committee relative to your database. You probably would need a data jockey and somebody watching out for that data to say, hey, you got 2/3 of the buying committee here on the last 10 opportunities, or somebody who's really looking at that analysis. The simple attribution won't stop is stuff in people's heads.
Yeah.
Like if it's up in people's heads, really difficult to do any measurement on that. Yeah. Other than you have to question, why is it in their heads? Goes back to that workflow question of,
yep,
have the systems been designed to make it easy for your sales and your SDRs to work, to do their jobs?
Yep.
And if it's not, I would keep it in my head too. Like, why would you? Why, unless I'm getting browbeat, hey, you got to fill out that CRM system, which a lot of people get browbeat and they're tired of that. It's a pain. And now there are AI solutions that dump some of that stuff from email and from your calendar into Salesforce or whatever, do some of the routine data entry. So I think you'll see a little bit more about that. But yeah, the problem exists. There's no silver bullet. Contact roles in Salesforce can help. Certainly looking at personas and who you're targeting and looking at the buyer journey and dissecting after the fact of somebody who's purchased and going back through and figuring out how the puzzle was built. You can do it that way, but there's no easy answer. No easy answer to your question. So good question.
Yeah. Okay. Last question. Then I want to transition to what we call the lightning round. We talked a little bit about AI at the front end of that. And certainly, you know, I think that what you had mentioned was maybe a little bit in the second to third tier complexity of AI or opportunities of AI. But like, where do you see AI playing a role in ABX's future, maybe short, medium, long term, right? And either ways that you can use AI to be more efficient or ways to use AI to be more effective. Anything other than what we've talked about earlier that you'd want to mention?
Yeah, funny you should ask, because with my passion of ABX, I was just giving a presentation, actually it was 2 days ago, for Pavilion on AI and ABX. And it really made me reflect on how our customers were adopting and how our team is using AI. And it really made me think hard for the first time, can this process be streamlined? I think you're exactly right. There's like orders of magnitude here. So we ended up creating several page document, which if any of your listeners have interest, ping me on LinkedIn and reference this podcast. I'll be happy to get you a copy. We talked about use cases. We talked about budgets. And we talked about the maturity curve of adoption. And based on your question, I'll click to the maturity curve, but I will say that there was a lot of interest on budgets based on team size, mm-hmm. as well as use cases based on team size. But on the maturity curve, we typically see everybody starting off with these $20 a month ChatGPT, Gemini. I've had for several months now this Pixel 9 that came with Gemini. So I've been beating the heck out of AI left and right. Everybody's doing that right now at every level. So it's like bring your own AI tools. That's like stage one. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies now are looking at stage two, where existing vendors have AI as part of their solution, a Gong, a ZoomInfo Copilot. Demandbase and Sixth Sense will argue that they've had AI all the time. So there's that. HubSpot AI. Salesforce, like the 800-pound gorilla AI. Yeah. The challenge that we see in getting to level two is finding solutions that are scalable and trainable. And we haven't seen broad-based adoption yet. You listen to ZoomInfo's quarterly earnings calls. At one point, they said they had a $60 million business very recently in Copilot, which is their AI solution. I haven't found a lot of people adopting it yet, so I don't know if they're reclassing other products or if people are really adopting. Almost all of our customers have ZoomInfo. So I do think that's the stage two. And then stage three, there's a lot of AI companies that are pure plays. And you could argue this could be stage two, this could be stage three. Where we see that the opportunity in the stage three is bringing new vendors in to do work differently. So let me give you an example, an SDR. Instead of an AI replacing SDRs or an AI calling on low non-target market elements, we actually see AI now coming into the second part of the SDR side. So the SDR does the initial call and the initial contact and then sends the AI out to do all the research to then have the follow-on meeting.
Yeah.
But that's a brand new way of doing business. It's a brand new company. Stage three. And then who knows stage four? Like, I feel like Salesforce is very aspirational right now. They've hired thousands of people on their team on the SMB because they know that they're likely going to adopt. The AI agent and their infrastructure and vision is unbelievable. They approached even our company to do something. And I'm like, oh my God, this could replace so many things that we're doing.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of inertia. Even I had inertia. I'm like, I'm not sure I want to be spending my time as the guinea pig trying to figure this out for somebody else. So there was that tension with me personally. I'm sure other companies are going to adopt it.
Yeah.
We have clients that I would say have been reluctantly engaging Salesforce with AI right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's one or two in particular that are in the tech space that are going pretty far down that path. And it's been really intriguing. But I'd say they're more the exception rather than the rule for now. So that's the maturity curve that we see.
Yeah.
And I just want to reiterate, if anybody, you know, I'd love to get sharper on this too. Maybe I've missed something, but I'm happy to share that presentation with anybody that asks.
Yeah, I think what will be real helpful is as we publish the episode, if anyone would like to have that, they can make a comment on the episode and we can get that out to them.
Yeah.
So, Jen, you and I could probably talk about this for another 2 hours. We don't have that. We've got just a couple of minutes left. So I want to just transition and ask you a couple of questions that is in the spirit of the lightning round. So I guess the first question would be, like, what do you enjoy most about the work that you do?
Ooh, what do I enjoy most? I love everything about being a marketer and in the sales side. I just think that we've got great jobs. It's stressful as hell, but it's just invigorating work. I love being on the sales and marketing. I am not somebody who could do customer success or finance, even though it's my undergrad. I love sales and marketing. I don't know how I fell into this, but I just love every minute of it. You name it, I love it.
Yeah.
So,
is there anything that you enjoy the least? Or a different way to ask that question would be, what's really hard about your role?
Well, I've got a unique role as a business owner. I'd say the really hard is going back to that back office stuff. Like, I hate invoicing. I hate payments and the logistics behind that. It's like the necessary evil. I wish I could do away with all of that. And I've delegated quite a bit, if not all of it, because I just hate doing it. I would rather just approve it and, yep, that looks right.
Yeah.
And spend my time doing stuff like this, where I get my true joy from.
Where do you turn to for inspiration or insights, right? So I know you've got a lot of people that you connect with at events and socially, but I usually like to use this as a platform to promote other people's, you know, great ideas and great work as well. So any thoughts in terms of people you follow or you think are providing, you know, really good thought leadership out there?
Ooh. I don't know if there's any one answer. I feel like I'm a diversified stock portfolio on that. LinkedIn has all sorts of thought leaders that I follow, and I couldn't even begin to name, of all different generations too. God has blessed me with the capacity to meet a lot of people, talk with a lot of people, network with a lot of people. I learn everything from everyone.
Yeah.
I can't point to any single source to say that made my net worth or in terms of my knowledge, because one of my team members, everybody compared to me these days is old, or I'm old compared to everybody else. One of my team members, a different generation, she gave me some insights today. I'm like, why didn't I think of that? I get insights from everywhere. And I hate to say it, I'm starting to get some insights even from AI now that have been particularly helpful. And let me double click into that. So I have lost 25 pounds since November. What is it? February. So that's what, 3 or 4 months? 90% of that was through AI coaching.
No kidding.
So 10% of it was meeting with a nutritionist telling me I should be eating better. And I took that transcript, brought it over to AI, and we have tuned, tweaked. I beat the living hell out of it with AI.
Yeah.
And it's working like a charm.
No kidding. Wow.
So here's to another 15. We got a little bit more time to go. But yeah, it's been amazing. And I rode my bike 2,000 miles last year. I didn't lose anything, which is why I was so frustrated and went to the nutritionist. AI connected the dots for me.
Amazing.
So
wow.
I guess I'm getting more inspiration from AI right now,
yeah.
But I get just as much from people too. So
yeah.
It's not an all AI world, not yet.
All right, last question, John. I guess there's two questions, but less what's pertaining to this. So when you're not in the world of sales and marketing and helping leaders think about their business, what do you like to do on your off time?
Well, we're coming up on March, which for me is like religious time of year, March Madness. I'm a huge college basketball fan, equal opportunity, both men's and women's. I've been to 5 Final Fours, 3 men's, 2 women's. So, and my team has won in each of those. My undergrad was University of Connecticut, which is now hated by a lot of fans out there, but non-UConn fans, because we've won so often and we deserve some of the criticism that we've been getting recently. But it's been a huge passion area of mine. So I don't know how many stadiums, 20 different stadiums. I've been everywhere. So
yeah.
It's been fantastic to watch them.
Yeah. Also one of my favorite times of year as well. I don't necessarily follow college ball throughout the course of the season as closely, but when that tournament comes, man, do I get into it. Okay, very last question. If people want to reach out to you, learn more, or connect, what's the best way?
Best way is to follow me on LinkedIn or connect on LinkedIn and reference this conversation, Randy, that we had. And
fantastic. Well, John, appreciate all the insights and time. That is another episode of the Revenue Lounge. Thanks, everyone. John, have a great day.
Thanks again for having me, Randy.